You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out today. It's time for Food Friday. Today we're not so much taking a look at a single food, but rather a flavor. According to our next guest, it's one that's traditionally been snubbed in North American cuisine, but with the rise of things like IPA beer, dark chocolate, and greens like arugula and radicchio, the flavor of bitter is maybe finally having its moment, and our guest makes the case that a touch of bitter can breathe new and exciting life into your cooking. Jennifer McLaughlin joins us now. She is a chef, food writer, and author who's written several books. Her newest is called Bitter, A Taste of the World's Most Dangerous Flavor with Recipes. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Veronica.
Well, so right off the start, let's get a definition for bitter, because it turned out to be a lot harder to pin down than you thought.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I thought, you know, it'd be pretty straightforward, but it's a difficult flavor or taste to pin down, because I think it's so variable. You know, we can all agree what's like sweet or salty, but we all have different ideas on what is bitter. It can range from something like a celery leaf, which is mildly bitter, right through to something that is, you know, really bitter, like an espresso coffee.
So as an epitome of bitter, you went all the way back to your childhood. You looked at a white grapefruit that you used to eat. What was it about that grapefruit that just really captured bitter?
Yeah, it's
bitter?
Like, I talk to some people, and of course they don't even remember white grapefruit because the pink and the red ones are so popular now. But there was something special about the white grapefruit. It did have more of a bitter chemical in it, which means that it was actually a lot better for your health. And it was just that kind of bitterness. It was like you needed a touch of sugar to counterbalance it. And that's a very strong memory from my childhood. So that was kind of, I was talking to a friend saying, you know, how that white grapefruit have totally disappeared and how everything seems to be getting sweeter and sweeter in our lives. All the food seems to be getting sweeter. Sugar is added to everything. It's kind of time to bring bitterness back, because if you take bitterness out of your cooking, you really lose something.
It seems as though, at least in the United States, we've kind of gotten to the point where, you know, bitter is a flavor that in the past we've avoided. Bitter is bad. It's sort of the thing that has been burned onto the bottom, or that makes you pucker in some way. And it's not a flavor that we seek out in our cooking. Why should we reconsider bitter right now?
I think we should consider bitter because you can have bitter in a dish without it being, you know, tongue-curlingly, horribly bitter that you want to spit it out. I think bitter adds dimension and depth to a dish. So, you know, my favorite example to give people is something like caramel. And, of course, you know, everyone says, well, no, caramel is sweet. And, yeah, that's true. But if you, when you make caramel, which is made by cooking sugar until it caramelizes, you need to take it to a point just before it burn, so it just has like all these different chemical compounds, and then you make a caramel that is so much less sweet and so much more complex and interesting to eat. So I think that's what bitterness does. You know, adding a few bitter greens to a salad makes it so much more interesting than just something that's made with Boston lettuce.
Right, and you make the case that bitter is a great balancer, because if you get all the dimensions in perfect harmony, that is beautiful cooking, and I imagine bitter can play a key role in that.
Yeah, and bitter is, you know, it's a perfect match for fat, one of my favorite things to talk about, too. But if you have a very rich dish, say like a duck breast or something, and you serve that with some bitter greens or some broccoli rabe or something, what bitterness does, it really helps your digestive juices. So it really helps you digest the fat and make you feel so much better. So it's a very good balancer for a lot of things.
Well, let's talk about some of those greens you were mentioning, the bitter greens that you think really make a dish extraordinary. And some of them were radicchio and frisée and lots of these arugula, these new greens we've seen picking up popularity in the United States. What do you like about them and how do you use them?
I like them a lot, and I think they're becoming popular because you see them a lot in salad mixes that you can buy in the supermarket. You know, radicchio is great because it has that wonderful red color, and it's great to add to a salad, but it's also really great to, like, grill or sauté, because that balances out its bitterness a little bit. And, you know, if you grill it and then serve it with something like a creamy blue cheese or a creamy goat's cheese, I love that combination.
That does sound good. Well, what are some...
And also something like, you know, dandelion greens, which you see sometimes in the supermarket. You balance that with like a rich, fatty bacon dressing where you cook the bacon and then you put that in with the greens, the bitter greens, and then you take the fat from the cooked bacon and you make a dressing with that. That's just a fabulous combination.
Okay, you're selling us on it here. What are some other introductory bitter foods? If someone is intrigued by this bitter idea, how can they start gently?
A good way to start is with a salad. So you can make your regular salad that you might make with like a Boston lettuce or different kinds of sweeter lettuces, and then just throw in a few of these greens, or put in some like endive, Belgian endive leaves, or put in some radicchio, put in a few celery leaves. You know, celery is a very underrated vegetable, and most people just throw the leaves away. Those leaves are really pleasantly bitter. So take out a few of the Boston leaves and replace them with these bitter greens, and you'll see that the salad is so much more interesting to eat. And then I think after a few times, you really want to just take the Boston lettuce right out and just make a whole mixture of bitter greens.
Well, chicory is another example that you write about in your book, and it's also a fascinating story of chicory coffee and how it found its way to Louisiana. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, chicory was added to chicory. We always think of the green part, but in some parts of the world, especially in Germany, it was grown for the root. You know, coffee was quite expensive, and it got more expensive in places like Louisiana when there was blockades during the Revolutionary Wars and all that. So people would grind up other things. They would roast different kinds of things from, like, nuts and everything, but they would roast the chicory root to make coffee. And then and they add it to the coffee beans, or they just make a kind of coffee. It wasn't really coffee at all, but they make a kind of coffee with a roasted root. And people grew, especially in Louisiana, grew actually to like this chicory coffee. And anyone who's been to Louisiana has been to the cafe where you have the chicory coffee, and it's totally a different taste.
And is that, you know, the bitterness of that, is that why it goes so well with beignets?
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, I mean, coffee is bitter. You know, we kind of forget about coffee being bitter today because we've grown so used to the taste, and we put milk and we put everything else in, so that mitigates its bitterness. But, yeah, as soon as you roast something, you caramelize something, you almost burn it, you play up those bitter flavors. Like, one of my other favorite things is, like, toast. You know, people make toast, but if you make toast properly, you get like those wonderful burnt edges, and they're kind of the best part to eat because there's a little bit of bitterness in them. And so when you put like jam on your toast, the sweetness of the jam and the bitterness of the burnt edges is just like a perfect combination.
As we get older, do we naturally or physiologically, do we come to like bitter more, be more accepting than we do as children?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, most kids don't like bitter tastes, and as children, we have more taste buds on our tongue, and so we're much more sensitive to bitterness. And also, there's an innate rejection of bitterness because it can signal a toxin or a poison, and that's very dangerous when we're like a baby or a child because just a small amount would kill us. But as we grow older, we lose taste buds, so things that we thought were extremely bitter when we were kids are not nearly as bitter to eat. And also we learn that things like caffeine are not going to kill us, they actually stimulate our nervous system, and we actually learn to like them, and we learn to crave these bitter tastes. So I kind of think of bitter as being a very adult taste. It's something that older people enjoy much more than younger people.
And you've been kind enough to give us a recipe, radicchio and pumpkin risotto. Can you talk us through that one? How does bitter come into play?
Well, I think that's a really good combination because, you know, I mean, I call it pumpkin. You probably call it squash. But, you know, it's a sweet flavor, the squash. So the bitterness of the radicchio matches that, the sweetness of the squash. Of the squash, and so it balances it out. And it's also a very pretty combination because you've got the orange pumpkin or squash in with the risotto, and then the purple leaves of the radicchio. So, and then you put some fat on there with the Parmesan cheese, and it's just a really, really good combination and perfect for this time of the year when there's pumpkin everywhere.
I never thought I would crave bitter things, but I'm starting to talking to you. Is this something that you actively crave now that you've really...
I think I've always craved bitter. And, you know, think about chocolate. Now, you know, we probably all start off with a very sweet chocolate, but once, you know, I think it's a good way for people to get used to bitterness because almost everybody loves chocolate. And you go to the supermarket and buy your regular chocolate bar and then go and buy some of those more expensive chocolate bars that are like, you know, they start at 65 and they go to 70, 84, and some even go up to like 90% cocoa beans. And you'll just, you'll move from that sweetness through into the bitterness, and you'll find that you just need one square of that more bitter chocolate to be very satisfying. Mm. And it's much more interesting. You'll actually taste, not the sugar anymore, but you'll taste the flavors of the chocolate, like the dried fruits and the different nuances there are in the chocolate once you take the sugar away.
We're talking right now with the author and chef Jennifer McLagan about all things bitter. She's the author of the book Bitter, A Taste of the World's Most Dangerous Flavor with Recipes. And speaking of recipes, we have one up for you, the radicchio and pumpkin risotto that we were just talking about. That recipe is up on the Central Time Facebook page right now. And we'd love to hear from you. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How do you feel about bitter as a flavor? Do you crave it, as our guest Jennifer McLagan does? And what bitter foods do you like to cook with? What questions do you have about how to use it, how to experiment with it, and to bring out other flavors in food using bitter? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard. We're talking with chef and author Jennifer McLagan. She's taking us on a culinary tour of the flavor bitter, why some of us love it, some of us can't stand it, but how to use it now and bring out the best in our cooking. She thinks bitter is having a moment. You can join the conversation with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. What about you as an adult? Have you grown to appreciate bitter beer, for instance, IPAs? Do you crave that flavor? What about that dark, dark chocolate without the high sugar content? Is that something you feel that you have become increasingly fond of, maybe as you get older, or maybe we're just moving in that direction? And how do you use that bitter flavor in your cooking? 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Take our first caller now. Casey joins us from Green Bay. Hi, Casey.
Hi. I was calling to see if you would consider salt to be a bitter taste, as you define it. It has some of those same properties of cutting through fat, you know, that you had mentioned bitter has.
Gotcha. Thanks, Casey. Salt, is that sometimes a bitter component?
I would call salt its own taste. Like, you know, I put it like you think of sweet and sour and salty and bitter and umami, or that savory taste. I think what you'll find with salt is if you add salt to something that's bitter, you'll probably reduce its bitterness. Salt is a way of like masking bitterness. So if you put some like that's like a salty ham with something that's bitter, it will counteract the bitterness. I wouldn't call salt itself bitter. You might be thinking of something like, often you'll think of like sodas or some kind of sparkling mineral waters. They can be bitter, and they can also be salty as well. So a lot of confusion about what bitter is, and the thing is it's very hard to define, and what you'll find and think of as bitter might not be bitter to me. Everyone has their own like a variation of bitterness.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Casey. And you can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Is bitter having a moment? Is this something that you crave? Maybe in beer, in chocolate, in those greens, arugula, radicchio, frisée, that are a little more bitter as well. And Jennifer, you experiment with some interesting things, some interesting ingredients. And one of these is tobacco. You even have a recipe for chocolate tobacco truffles. How does that work?
Yeah, I was kind of I was interested, you know, because there's all these molecular chefs now who are doing all those weird tastes, and they play around with tobacco as well, which, of course, is bitter. And if you ingest tobacco, it's not the same effect as smoking. I'd like to say that straight up, and there's a tiny amount of tobacco. But what's really interesting in the truffles that are flavored, they're infused with a little bit of cigar, so they have this kind of bitterness that hits you at the very end. So you have this little chocolate truffle that's kind of bitter because it's rolled in cocoa. Cocoa's very bitter. Then you get the sweet chocolate richness and creaminess. And then just as you swallow the end of the truffle, there are actually receptors in the back of your throat that pick up bitterness, and you'll just get this little kind of bitter kind of hiccup in the back of your throat. And it's the same thing you'll get if you swallow a spoonful of olive oil. If you have very good quality olive oil at home, you should just take a spoonful and swallow it completely, and you'll probably want to cough because there's little receptors at the back of your throat. So it's just kind of a little curiosity kind of thing I did.
Yeah, a little science there that you can test at home with olive oil. Well, let's take another phone call. Lisa joins us next in Viroqua. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a special ed teacher, and I have students that have exceptional sensory needs, and I often meet those needs using sour candies. I'm wondering what the distinction between sour and bitter is.
That's a very interesting one, because a lot of people confuse them. And actually, sourness or acidity comes from acids, but it still gives you sometimes that negative reaction where you, if you have one of those very sour candies, you want to spit it out because it's so sour. But only acids will give you that, whereas bitterness comes from like over thousands of different chemicals. So bitterness comes from a whole lot of other different sources. But it was interesting, when I was working on the book, I asked a lot of people, and people said to me things like, rhubarb, that's bitter. But actually it isn't, it's sour. So they're very close, because they're often negative tastes, but they are different.
Okay, well, thank you much for that, Lisa. And on to Rocky in Neshkoro. Hi, Rocky.
Hi, Dawn.
Good, thanks. What's your question?
Well, you were talking about bitter things and the different tastes and stuff. In my drinking days, I used to like brandy old fashions, and then I got really hooked on brandy old fashioned sweets. And to make a brandy old fashioned sweet, you have to add bitters. Have you ever tried it?
Bitters. Okay, yeah. Let's get into that. That's an interesting one. What about that?
Yeah, it's interesting, because you know, you can buy bitters in a bottle, which is often Angostura bitters. Probably everyone has a bottle in the back of their cabinet, and that's something that's quite bitter that's added to cocktails. And I think there is a trend today into making cocktails with bitters. There's a lot of people making bitters from everything, from like rhubarb through to lemons and limes. And I'm hoping that cocktail, that interest in those bitter cocktails will translate into the kitchen. So people who like cocktails that aren't super sweet anymore will think about, oh, maybe I should cook something that has a little bit of bitterness in it as well.
Well, I want to dovetail a little bit into beer now, because, beer brewing has been around for ages, but the rise of hops as a brewing ingredient has led to this big craft brewery beer boom, you know, pairing beers and the flavor bitter. How did that come to be?
It's interesting, because, you know, beer was originally made without hops, and then hops were added for the bitterness. And also they discovered that there's a chemical in hops that works as a preservative, so it helps keep the beer. It helps make the beer last longer. And, you know, now everyone is making beers of different amounts of bitterness. They're growing special hops in different regions, and they're flavoring the beer with it. And beer is kind of, you know, everyone cooks with wine. They always add, like, wine to something or an alcohol. But beer is pretty interesting to cook with as well. So if you're making any kind of, even something like a beef stew, which you probably might add some red wine to, you should try adding beer, because the beer will work exactly like the wine, but it'll add a depth and a bitterness, and it'll cut through the richness of the beef stew. So it's a really, really interesting liquid to cook with.
And Jennifer, in our last seconds, are there other bitter ingredients that you find now you can't live without and that we should try?
Oh, there's lots, but I really think that the frise is a good one to like. The lettuces are really good ones to start. And turnip is another thing that I think. I like turnip, all the way from turnip, and I'm learning to love rutabaga. I don't love that as much because it's too bitter for me, but my husband loves it a lot, so I cook it. So I think you should not try masking these vegetables that are bitter with like sugar. You should try and match them with like fat or salt or balance them out with other ingredients and just embrace bitter. Just add a little bit to your cooking and then you'll find that you can take a little bit more. It's a taste you need to learn to love.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Veronica.
That was Jennifer McGlagan, the author of Bitter, A Taste of the World's Most Dangerous Flavor with Recipes. I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time. News is coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.